Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. Officials have found the source behind what made 80 people sick at the Rifle Rodeo earlier this month.
This is fairly serious stuff.
And a Brazilian clothing company is facing fines for entering the water at Hanging Lake.
And I hope that they make a good example of them.
Commercialism is showing up at other hiking spots in the valley, too. A kiosk of sorts has been set up at the base of Smuggler Mountain so hats can be sold to hikers. A new whitewater park in the Roaring Fork River in Basalt has boaters on their toes.
They're basically class 3, class 4 holes that are a little intimidating.
In Snowmass, the Aspen Skiing Company has gotten approval for on-mountain summer improvements like an alpine slide. And finally, Rifle voters will consider allowing recreational marijuana sales in their community. Joining me in the studio this week are Brent Gardner-Smith, Executive Director of Aspen Journalism, and Andy Stone, former editor of the Aspen Times, as well as Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, speaking via Skype. Randy, you had some breaking news on your website on Wednesday and then a story in the paper on Thursday about the source of people being sick at the Rifle Rodeo. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, the state lab tests confirmed what people told us on Facebook and by email, that it was in fact foodborne illness. The county news release didn't say so, but our Facebook posters suggested that it was pulled pork. And what's interesting to me about this is the county said, well, we didn't know that food was being served at the Rifle Rodeo, which was on the county fairgrounds. So it was the responsibility, I guess, of the vendor and the organizers to tell the county that they were serving food. And the physical location was supposed to be inspected to be sure that the food was being kept warm enough. The particular bacteria that caused this is pretty common, not that serious, but is known to breed in kind of large quantities of food that are not kept warm enough. And I thought it was interesting, too, that the county has decided that it won't issue a fine, even though about 80 people got sick. It said our rule, a public health rule, is education and prevention. So I guess that we've educated food vendors that they need to apply for their license for locations.
And educated the public that the county doesn't really care all that much if you get sick.
Well,
you have it coming.
And, you know, it's only been about 2 years since food inspections were turned over to the counties from the state. And we do know that the county is serious about this sort of thing at most festivals. They go around from tent to tent and booth to booth and do the testing. So it's unfortunate and it's a little bit puzzling, I guess.
There was that case out in California fairly recently where people were dying from having put cheese sauce on their nacho chips from this one, was a gas station convenience store. And people went in there and they bought some chips, and there was a container of warm cheese sauce to put on the chips. And it turned out to have, I think it was botulism in it, and two or three people died. So, you know, this is fairly serious stuff.
Randy, have you talked to the vendor, the food seller?
So there are 3,142 counties in the United States, and I'm guessing that 3,000 or so of them would have named the vendor. Garfield County was not one of them. So I'm going to file an open records request.
And then, Randy, you also had a story about Hanging Lake, which has fallen victim to overcrowding and overuse, just like other areas in the wilderness. And now it looks like a clothing company out of Brazil has gotten into some trouble. Can you expand on that as well?
The amazing thing is this Brazilian activewear company, Liquido Active, brought a photographer and two models, put the two models out on the log in yoga poses, and the photographer waded into the lake and posted this on social media. The CEO of the company said, I didn't see any signs. I guess they weren't in Portuguese. You know, it's pretty impossible to hike that lake and not, or hike that trail and not see any signs about staying on the trail and out of the lake. And the Forest Service yesterday said that they had ticketed the company and that fines were possible. And I say that it is about time, and I hope that they make a good example of them. The district ranger said the company is going to work with the Forest Service on education. I hope that's a good sum of money and a pretty substantial campaign to help with that. And very soon, the Forest Service has been talking about this for months, but really very soon, the Forest Service is going to issue a hanging lake management plan that we are certain is going to include a fee and a shuttle system that limits the number of visitors per day to Hanging Lake to about 600, which is about half of what happens on a summer day now. So hopefully all of that will help. The bad things that have happened there, maybe the publicity is such that there'll be some policing along the trail. I think it's important for people who are walking the trail to call out people who bring their dogs, call out people who start out on the log. And, you know, I know that's uncomfortable, but yeah. I just, we all have a responsibility there.
Brent? How far-fetched is it, Randy, to suggest that there's a Hanging Lake ranger on the trail every day?
Well, if there is money raised from the, right now, they, in the peak summer season, they either have somebody in the parking lot or on the trail. And if they were to raise enough money from a fee structure, they could get another person there. And I think there should be a ranger up on the boardwalk whenever possible.
Andy?
I was just going to jump in and mention, if I can, as I always tend to do, hark back to a little history. But it was when they started the major expansion of the highway of I-70 through the Glenwood Canyon. And one of the things they talked about was how they were going to enhance the recreational experience at Hanging Lake by putting the interstate through the tunnel there so that Hanging Lake would be protected from the traffic noise and all of that. And, of course, what's really happened is that it's been completely overwhelmed at this point. And it may be just the, you know, the fact that there are that many more people going through on the highway now. But one way or another, the crowds there have multiplied completely out of control, and they're just destroying the experience.
I think social media has an awfully lot to do with that. The photos of Hanging Lake on Instagram, then people driving through on the interstate say, oh, I've got to see that.
Yeah. But then they're just, you know, it's the people like us and people who live in the valley, we understand the whole concept of leave no trace. But people who are just, you know, America, basically, they don't understand that, city folk. We've seen it in every other wilderness area, too. That's what's happened in Conundrum and Bruin Bells Wilderness area, and they're starting to, you know, figure out management plans for that too. Randy, there's no ranger from the county, like Garfield County, that would be available for patrolling that area?
No, the Glenwood Chamber and the city have chipped in money to help with somebody at the parking lot in the past, but there's no Garfield County law enforcement that's there. We did a story this week, too, about how the rescue's there. That's within the Glenwood Springs Fire Department's jurisdiction, which probably dates back many decades. And they talked about, after the trail was closed for maintenance for 3 days early this month, they had 3 days in a row where they were called out to rescues, which what they were, you know, it's not like there are so many municipal firefighters that we've got redundant crews. So what the fire chief worries about is, you know, if I have to run out to Hanging Lake, then am I going to have adequate people for if there's a fire, if there's a rescue here, and so forth. So it strains our infrastructure in many ways, just in the same way that it strains the lake and the trail itself.
And again, you see so many people heading up that trail who obviously have no idea what they're getting into. There, you know, you see women in high-heeled shoes, I have seen, heading up the Hanging Lake Trail.
And,
I mean, it's just crazy.
Flip-flops in April when there's still ice.
Yeah.
You know, this is a segue to the smuggler thing, I think, that you were going to talk about. But there was a rescue a couple days ago at Thomas Lakes, which is not a severe hike. I mean, it's a little bit longer hike, but
if you're from Kansas, it is.
Right. Yeah, they texted. They were able to reach 911 and then text that they were hiking east of Lower Thomas Lake, and the dispatcher texted back, "Walk west."
Right. You know, the Pitkin County has a whole open space program, so they have more rangers than meets my taste, for sure. But they're patrolling all over the place. And they're, you know, you see them all the time on Smuggler, as you Smuggler Road, as you're going up, and, you know, poop patrol and all that stuff. And it's just this marketing to the nature part of our valley that is starting to get so commercialized. And I was just telling you guys, Thursday morning I went up for a walk, and first of all, some clever person has put a sign right at the bottom of Smuggler Mountain that says Botox Lane. It's right underneath the street signs. And I noticed on Thursday morning that there's now a guy set up right at the bottom of the mountain with a tent over him, and he's got a hat display, and he's selling hats. And it's, you know, it says cover up. And then, so now it's you can go shopping first for a hat and then go on a hike.
Maybe it's time for a beer tent at the top.
Well, you know, we used to say don't Californicate Colorado, and now it's more Disneyfication. And, you know, it's all turning into an enormous theme park. That seems to be the direction things are going, where there are more and more people and they are more and more catered to, and there's money in every crevice to be vacuumed out.
Well, I will say this. The city of Aspen, I just found out, did a training for all of their employees, and it's from Walt Disney. So they have gotten theme park training.
Probably very helpful.
And I'll tell you, with Mark Oldman, who's a sommelier who did a seminar at Food and Wine this past weekend, on Saturday or Sunday morning, he did a seminar that I went to, and he had gone to the Wine at the Mine party on Smuggler on Saturday night. And it was a beautiful evening, great sunset. And he mentioned it. He said, you know, that sunset was killer. And, you know, I thought to myself, what is it? Do you guys just like flip a switch, like the Disney switch? Like cue the sunset. And then, you know, I'm thinking that some guy's going to jump out of the bush and say, okay, that's $80 for that sunset.
Cue the moose.
Cue the moose, right. Yeah. I was on Thursday morning. Tony Todaro, who's a Pitkin County sheriff's deputy, had his car parked on Spring and Hopkins in downtown Aspen. And all of a sudden, this moose came flying down the street, just trying to ride by him.
On Hopkins, right?
Yeah, it's the first time ever that there's been a moose sighting in downtown Aspen.
Now, are we sure this wasn't just a beta test for the new animatronic moose that will be populating the newly renovated malls?
Right. Yeah, and Randy, didn't you have a story about just caution about dogs in that moose habitat?
I don't know where that came from. Parks and Wildlife news release that there have been two incidents in Colorado this year where people have gotten stomped, and in both cases, dogs led the moose back to their owners. You know, a moose sees a dog as a predator, and they will run, and, you know, I guess maybe the dogs are figuring, well, I'm faster than the human, so I can get away.
And I mean, and this is a good lesson of reintroducing a species back into a state, and now we're starting to see them come. They're not just in the Maroon Bells area. They're populating, and they're starting to be encroaching onto our little hamlet. You know, this one is hanging out by Mountain Valley, and I think it's the one that you'll see, like, on the Hunter Creek Loop. And then probably also the community garden over by Merle Open Space. So now you can, they're just like bears.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a cautionary tale.
They're worse to hit than either a deer or an elk. They don't go over your car. They come in.
Right.
So there's been some real trouble in Summit County with the moose and the highway, too.
Sure. There was a couple accidents last year coming on just on Ruin Creek Road. There was hitting the moose
versus car?
Yeah. That was Brent Gardner-Smith, Executive Director of Aspen Journalism,
I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you're listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. We continue our conversation with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, who is speaking via Skype, and Andy Stone, former editor of the Aspen Times. Brent, you cover water issues for Colorado Mountain News Media, and I know you've covered the Basalt Whitewater Park, and now it's in mostly just what the purpose of that was and the lead up to it, and now it's done. And there was a story in the Aspen Times that not everybody thinks it's perfect.
Scott Condon wrote a great story about it, that there's two wave features in the Basalt Kayak Park, which is just across the entrance to Elk Run on Two Rivers Road. And it's supposed to create waves up to about 1,500 cubic feet per second, but the river's running at 3,000. So it's created these two big, catchy, foamy holes that have been not popular with playboaters, with kayakers, and they're a little intimidating to rafters going through that section. They're basically class three, class four holes that are, in the parlance of river rafters, sticky and pushy and a little intimidating. And
right.
So I'm not sure if they've created a hazard unnecessarily, but that seems to be the discussion out there among the boating community.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
If God had done that, it would just be a gnarly point on the river and people would know about it. So
right.
If we want to regard local government as God, we'll just put up with it.
Well, what was the impetus to do it in the first place?
Well, there's something under Colorado water law called a recreational in-channel diversion. And so if you build a structure in the river and run water over it to create a kayak park, it creates a water right. And so the county wanted to build it just above the confluence with the Frying Pan River so that in the future they could call water down to the kayak park. And I think its real purpose is to prevent new transmit mountain diversions off the top of the Roaring Fork. That if someone wanted to take more water off the top, it would be junior to the kayak park. So the kayak park is designed to keep water in the river. I think it's unfortunate, though, under state law that you have to build these structures in the river. You can't just say it's a recreational stretch of water and so therefore it should have X amount of water in it. You have to build a structure. And so they built two structures and spent all winter with a excavator in the river working on it.
Does it have any ecological benefit?
Well, it's debatable. Some people say that it creates good fish habitat, and yet there's some papers that say actually it's bad for fish, these concrete structures in the river. So it's not an environmental thing other than it keeps water flowing down to that point from the upper Roaring Fork Basin. So
when
you could argue that's
it didn't before as
well,
much?
Well, it wasn't, you know, there was no... The thing is with these water rights, so the kayak park has probably a 2015 water right, I think, and so over time that'll become more and more valuable and will keep water flowing down the river from future depletions upriver. That's
right.
The point.
Concrete and backhoes just doesn't seem like it fits in with aquatic species and habitat.
Right. I mean, you have to make this big resource commitment in order to get this water right, in order to keep water in the river. So it's a little bit of destroying the river in order to save it. On the other hand, too, what's really interesting about the kayak park is they don't have the access situation really figured out.
They don't have
parking. You can get to it by two different sides of the river. On the one side, there's not much parking. On the other side, it's supposedly a private road, so you can't park over there. And so if it does prove to be really popular, it'll be sort of an attractive nuisance. That hasn't happened yet.
You haven't seen it?
No, and I've been out there at all different water levels looking at it and on some really hot days and been really struck by the absence of any kayakers out there goofing around. So the kayak community has not been impressed with the quality of the play waves. I guess we'll have to see when the water drops back down if anyone goes out and starts playing on it. But Pitkin County always seemed to have the attitude, we're doing it first for the water right, and if it turns out to be a great kayak park, well, that's a bonus.
What did you just say about build it to save it?
Right.
I think that's what's happening in Snowmass right now, on the mountain anyway.
Mm.
I mean, we can talk, Base Village is a whole nother story, but the ski company just got approval from the Forest Service to go ahead with its plan to develop more of the mountain for recreational opportunities. So here we are again with the, you know, development of our wilderness and in our backyard.
I don't know if this, you can call the Snowmass ski area the Frontside Wilderness, but it's close to the wilderness. But
well, sure.
I get
I
your
mean,
point.
What are they calling it? Forest land or something
lost
like that?
Lost forest?
The lost forest.
Lost forest.
In honor of the forest that is being lost to create this.
Yeah, I've been talking about alpine culture that's year-round.
They are very popular at other ski areas.
Yeah, they're
That's the thing. And I was surprised to learn they're going to run it in the winter, too.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. But, and again, you know, this is another one of those things that once upon a time we all used to scorn of. When Vail did it first, we went, well, that's Vail, of course. And now, well, it's Snowmass too, of course. And we're back to that Disneyfication, that theme parkification, right. If I can create a really ugly term.
They try to hold off, and then they realize that they have to go with the market trends.
I mean, I met someone recently from Revelstoke who said they built a coaster up in Canada in Revelstoke, and there's a three-hour wait for it. So, I mean, they're very popular and should drive a lot of traffic. It's a great thing to do with families. And so I kind of understand why they're building it. I don't think they're building it just I think they know they're going to get some cultural grief, but they're going to sell enough tickets that it makes it worthwhile for them.
I mean, we do. I hate to say this, but no, I don't hate to say it. We do want them to succeed. We do want the ski company to be a viable going business. And if they need to do this to bring in a little more money in the summers, that's not necessarily a terrible thing, is it?
I mean, I know the Forest Service, they have a set of criteria that they look at when they assess this stuff in an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement. So obviously that's not going to impact the habitat that much. I don't know.
The hard part really is how much you can contain visitors to the elk camp area and make sure they don't wander off into areas outside of the ski area. If you can contain them at the ski area, you can probably manage the potential disruption.
The wildlife will just move over.
Yes. I suppose someone, too, might say, well, you guys are riding around on your high horse. Your whole economy is based on these artificial lift conveyances. Yeah. So really, how much do you want to worry about another recreational device when that's what you do here?
Yeah, we're an industrial operation.
Randy, you see it. You have an alpine coaster yourself down there at the caverns. I mean, but it's also in prime habitat for certain species.
Well, the caverns have been developed for quite some time, though. Really, I mean, I wouldn't consider that to be wilderness like at all.
Have you been on the coaster, Randy?
You know, I haven't, but I'm going to go up this summer when the Haunted Mine Drop opens, which is actually going to be a bigger drop than the Tower of Terror at Disney.
And what?
There's a lot of buzz about that ride, and I want to do them both.
It's like a ride that drops you into an old mine shaft up there, right?
Well, they've dug the mine shaft, and they've themed it with a company, so it's very much like a Disney ride.
That was Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post, independent, speaking via Skype. And I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, host of Valley Roundup. We now continue our conversation with Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism, and Andy Stone, former editor of the Aspen Times. Let's go to the city of Aspen. You're taking away yet another perk. So, the city of Aspen has been charged with trying to keep traffic levels at 1993 levels. And that's for a lot of different reasons, one of which is to keep the PM10 pollution level down, which it's successfully been able to do. And then, meanwhile, try to make that bottleneck not as painful when you're coming in and out. And one of the things they did a while back was allow hybrid vehicles to park for free in the residential areas. And that was a great incentive for people to go buy hybrids. In fact, somebody I work with did just that, bought a hybrid for the free parking. You know, it's the right thing to do. Right? But now they're going to take that perk away at the end of next year because they say hybrid is not the most up-to-date technology for environmentally friendly vehicles.
Well, plus they're so common now that it's not really functioning as a discouragement to drive. If you offer free parking, people are going to drive rather than get on transit, right?
Right.
And so they've lost their moral high ground as driving the Prius, right?
However, again, as we were discussing, the article also mentioned that they are planning on taking away the free parking for all for totally electric, non-hybrid vehicles. So those are certainly the cutting edge. There's a smaller number of them, and it makes one wonder if really, despite what the city says, this is really all about revenue.
Well, it's also fascinating to me. One of the big pieces of news that raised my eyebrows last week was when the mayor said, okay, there's no political will to go across Marolt. We're not even going to entertain any aspects of transit that might go across there. And it's the entrance to Aspen, right? So let's not talk about it.
Okay. There hasn't been a vote in like 20 years either. So we haven't checked in with
The electorate.
With the electorate in a couple decades.
Right. And I don't know how, if that vote really stands anymore, that you could run two lanes and a light rail across that property. But no political will. And so the real question is, well, how much political will is there to solve the daily global warming parade? And I don't know.
Well, even if we're going to open that can of worms, the entrance to Aspen.
Sorry.
My point always is, okay, fine. You go ahead and go across the Merle open space in a cut and cover, whatever you want to do. You're still going to end up in a two-lane road.
You're still going to end up in a traffic
jam. On
Main
Street. And then the traffic jam is just on the inside of Shadow Mountain, and our PM10 level is going to go way up because everybody's sitting there.
So your argument's just a nicer place to have a traffic jam.
Yeah. It's wide open space out there in the entrance.
Again, it's that problem of too much stuff in a bag that is not sized for that much stuff. And, you know, Aspen is essentially a dead end. I mean, yeah, we have Independence Pass going out, but people aren't going out that way. All these people are coming into town. And again, too many people, too many crowds. We're not doing anything to really solve that problem. I mean, that's the root problem. And
whether it's Hanging Lake or it's the entrance to Aspen or if it's people trying to get over the Grand Avenue Bridge. That is the issue. But now it's like we have to do crowd control of some sort in every way. You know, if you're going to do a permit system for Conundrum and the Maroon Bells area and Hanging Lake, maybe it's time to start considering City of Aspen proper.
Yeah, shutting down the bridges and making it much more of a pedestrian island would do a lot.
I've never been opposed to a little Checkpoint Charlie at the old Forest Service building on the S-curves. Welcome, sir. What's your business in Aspen today?
Right.
And where are you going? And did you know it's $50 to park? And here's where you turn around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's coming.
We've found it so difficult to keep semi-trucks from going over Independence Pass. It's hard to believe we could turn people around at the edge of Aspen.
So, I'm pretty psyched, though. I took the bus today, and my underpass in Basalt, my pedestrian underpass, is almost finished. And they're building it just for me is my attitude. So it's easier for me to get on transit. So we do have some options.
Randy, I wanted to hit on another headline you had in your paper about Rifle. The Rifle City Council is doing a number of ballot questions for the fall, but there was one that kind of stuck out to me, which is the should they allow marijuana sales, right?
Yeah, I think there's one medical marijuana store in Rifle now, and they have not joined the party, but they're going to have an advisory vote in their municipal election in September. It won't be binding, but there are going to be, I believe, four new councilors, or there are four council seats up. Of course, some incumbents could win. So an advisory vote could influence what the council decides to do after that. And Parachute has gotten into the recreational marijuana business, and it's really helping their sales tax. So pressure's on, right?
Is there a ban other than just the one that's there?
I mean, a community has to proactively approve it before their sales, and Rifle has not done that.
What do you think is going to happen, Randy? You think there's any reason why people in Rifle wouldn't pass it?
I don't have a good read of that. Well, you know, we'll be doing some reporting between now and September. I think right now I probably would toss a coin. There's always a certain level of opposition to recreational marijuana, and it's not like you have to go all that far to get it. So I'm just not sure how people there would feel about it.
I bet they pass it.
Be interesting to pair that advisory question up with one on whether they should be selling alcohol or not. Be interesting to see how those two items weighted one against the other.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
That was Andy Stone, former editor of the Aspen Times, and Brent Gardner-Smith, executive director of Aspen Journalism, in the studio with me, along with Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, speaking via Skype. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.